Jordan, there's something that I think we don't pay attention to enough that I think we can help people that get this kingdom vision, that we want to help others, but we don't know where to start. We don't know how to grow into that or whatever else. And I really think, you know, like in the parable of the Good Samaritan, I mean, the Samaritan has compassion, which qualify him as a good neighbor, but he also had capacity. You know, I mean, there was competence and capacity, really. I mean, he had a, you know, means of transportation. The donkey had a first aid kit. You know, he had a credit card that the hotel accepted. I mean, so how do we build capacity into our people so that they can grow into the stuff? And I use five questions, not to template this after having talked about, you know, standardized versus customized, but what are the questions that allow people to state their own stuff? The questions can be standard, but they allow people to grow. And first of all, of course, the big question is what do I want to do to help people? And I don't know, no one really helped me with that at church, but I wish someone had. Now, of course, that's the big question. You say, well, if I know that, I don't know. But so I just tell people, look, pay attention to the stuff that keeps you up at night. Pay attention to the stuff that gets your attention. Mm-hmm. You know, pay attention to the stuff that either bugs you or energizes you. And these could be some clues, you know. So we all know people in our own lives. I'm thinking about a woman that moved from Alabama out to Central California and became aware of the sex trafficking and all that. And she just Jenny wouldn't stand for it. So she goes up to State House and says, you know, I want to help with this deal. And they say, well, good, you're in charge. And she said, wait a minute, I said, I want to help. They said, there's no, look at that long line of people behind you. There ain't nobody there. You know, you obviously, this is on your deal. And so, you know, so she starts, you know, Courage Worldwide out of that passion that she has to really help people. You know, but maybe, and sometimes, and that's a big dream. But, you know, the capacity to help people doesn't have to be a worldwide vision. I think sometimes we've blown that and used that as our only stories. But just helping people understand, you know, I want to be helpful to, you know, to this person or whatever. What's the saddest to me is I was at a Presbyterian church doing a conference, and I asked people, just turn and share with each other, you know, what troubles your heart, you know, what captures your interest, you know, what breaks your heart is really the way I phrased it. And a woman, an elderly woman, came up to me while everybody was talking, and, you know, and I leaned over because she wanted to speak. And she said, you know what breaks my heart? And I thought, boy, I'm fixing to hear a real, you know, insight into how people discover. She said, what breaks my heart is that nothing breaks my heart. She said, I'm in the same rut every day. I see the same people, go to the same places. She said, I'm, and she didn't use this word, but basically she was, you know, had been anesthetized to any real feelings of the pain and stuff of people, and there are plenty of that around. So I think we have to help people get in touch, even if it's to begin by having the admission that, you know, I don't have any pain for anybody else. Well, that itself is a starting place. I think, too, we have to help people so that these vision of what they want to do doesn't become a dream that turns into a nightmare of accusation because they're not doing it. We have to help people ask themselves the question, not just how do I want to help other people, what behaviors do I need to change in order to allow me to do that? I mean, that's kind of the, in other words, if we don't make room in our lives for that, you know, it could be as simple as, you know, an hour a week to go read to kids or whatever, or it could be as profound as my friend Josh, who, I met him through a college church that Kathy and I helped to get going. And he was a college student then, he graduated and few years later, he reestablished contact with me. He was working for a sign company. Somehow, it had gotten, and he lives in my town, and somehow he'd gotten in touch with this pain, this real passion to help young black boys who are missing positive male influence in their lives. Now, this guy that I'm talking to ain't black. He is lily white, blue-eyed, you know, and yet he can't get rid of this. So he tells me this story. He's been going to the worst part of town. He went to the police department. Where's your worst part of town? He gets in touch with the worst part of the worst part of town, this apartment complex. He contacts a slumlord who's in Alabama somewhere collecting rent from all that. He shames the guy into, you know, giving him a free apartment, you know, for stuff. And by the way, this was over like 2 years. I'm really compressing it. It took him a while to convince people, a good while, that he wasn't a narc, you know, just hanging around. He got to talking to the moms at the bus stop when the kids would come home from school every day and all that. Just getting to know, I mean, it sounds a little creepy, but this guy pulled it off. He's so genuine and stuff. And so, but you see, he gets his free apartment. And the first thing, he gets some of his friends and they start a Sunday night Sunday school for these kids that are in the apartments, you know, a lot of, and before we knew it, he had like, you know, 19 or 20 kids coming. And then he got in touch with their need. So he started an after school thing with them because they needed help with their homework. He just got aware of it. I'm getting around to how he answered the question of his own about what he, so he began to realize how much more they needed than he could give on a Sunday night drive-by. And he told me, he called me up for coffee one day, and he says, I need to quit my job so that I can give full time to this, because this after-school thing needs to happen every day and all that. And he says, I told my boss, who was also a Jesus follower, he said, I told my boss that I needed to quit. And the boss said, all right, then what you need to do is start a 501c3 so people can support you. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to make your first contribution, mm-hmm. you know. And, of course, that's why he was having coffee with me, so I could make a contribution mm-hmm. as well. But, you know, that behavior shift has enabled him, okay. you know, he's got three locations in town now, dozens of kids, you know, that they're, all their test scores are going up. Some of them have now graduated from his program, gone to college. I mean, it's a remarkable story. But if he'd not been willing to make that behavior shift, yeah. see, none of that would have been...
To notice and acknowledge it.
Yes.
And then start to make the room in life.
Exactly.
And decisions to orient his life.
To create the margin.
To be able... Yeah, the margin, the room to pursue that.
Yes. Otherwise... I think our dreams haunt us yeah. when we don't do that. Why I say they become nightmares.
Yeah.
They just point accusations at us, and we live with those. Instead of making the simple, the steps of obedience of yes, you know, and so that we are in fact able to live into those dreams. There's a third question I like to ask people, and that's, or to suggest to people they ask themselves, be honest about what do I bring to the table? And basically what I'm looking for here is to help people understand they're gifted, they're talented. They have those gifts and talents for a good reason. I mean, you know, I think kingdom-minded Jesus followers see their life as a mission trip. They don't go on mission trips. Their life's a mission trip. And if they can examine what's in their backpack, it's there for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a Gallup Strength Finder or whatever it is that helps you understand what you bring to the table, it can really help you. I find sometimes people that are trying to take, you know, mountain journeys and their backpack's full of beach stuff. You know, I mean,
yeah.
And so they wonder why they're frustrated and all that.
Or so many Christians are not confident at all in who they are, not even realizing God has given you gifts
yes.
and experiences We believe in a God who's hands-on, actively getting you ready for your part in this kingdom.
Right.
And a lot of people, because they don't have the speaking gift or right. They miss out on what's in their backpack.
It's like, I can remember when Chariots of Fire came out. Now, I'm a good bit older than you, so, you know, I was a seminary student when it came, first year of doctoral work. Came home, Kathy wanted, it was our first year of marriage. She said, I want to go to the movies, and I said, well, what's playing, you know, Chariots of Fire? I didn't know what it was. I thought it was a science fiction flick, for all I knew, you know, Ezekiel or whatever. But so we walk up to the block, up to the old movie theater that was on the square there in the town I was living in. And, you know, bought our stuff, assumed my usual posture in that old theater, which is, you know, get my stuff, then throw my feet across the seat in front of me. Not out of disrespect to the theater, because when the lights went down in that theater, all kinds of stuff came out roaming around, you know, underneath the seats. In fact, the refreshments were not for me. You use that to feed the stuff to keep them off
keep
of
them
you.
Off
know,
you.
While the, you know, if you ran out of refreshments before the movies, oh, there were skeletons in some of the chairs, just as a reminder. You don't run out of it. But we get to that scene, right, where Eric Little is trying to explanify to his sister why he's putting off mm-hmm. going into the family business, you know, which is missionarying to China. So he takes her out on that little walk outside above the church there in Edinburgh. Jenny, God made me for a purpose. China. Oh, Eric, because she thinks he's going to, you know, get on the next boat going. But you remember, he says, but he also made me fast.
Yeah.
When I run,
I feel
his pleasure.
I feel his pleasure.
I totally forgot where I was. My feet hit the floor. I sat straight up. It had never occurred to me. I didn't even know that was in the Bible. You know, Psalm 149, verse 4, part A, you know, for the Lord takes pleasure in his people. It had never occurred to me that I could bring a smile to the face of God like that.
Mm-hmm.
See, I knew how to keep, I'd grow up in church. Yeah. So I knew how to keep God up worrying at nights. I knew how to bring a frown to his face. But that idea, you know, and it was his talent. And when I run, when I do mm-hmm. what I'm built to do, I feel his pleasure.
Yeah.
Now, I'm so susceptible to new insights like that. I went jogging when the movie was over that night. No joke. I mean, 10 o'clock, I went out to high school. Did not feel God's pleasure. In fact, I tried for 2 years.
God did not make me
I
fast.
I decided when I eat, I feel his pleasure. But anyway, so taking an honest assessment of the stuff that jazzes us,
yes.
What kind of God would say, but not too much of that now, you know? I mean, we've got to help people figure out what jazzes them and believe that that's in their life for a reason.
Yeah.
Go for it. Yeah. What? Do the stuff that makes you feel alive.
Yeah. I don't know why the church got so Puritan.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's take those passions and push them down.
Push those down.
No.
And do something you don't like.
Yeah.
That really counts as spiritual discipline or something. It's craziness.
Yeah.
I mean, it's right out of the pit of hell. I mean, that's how you rob people of life. So, you know, then I think a fourth question to ask people, you know, that people need to ask themselves is, you know, we've talked a lot about this on the corporate level, but what's my personal scorecard? How will I know that, you know, I'm putting a dent in this? You know, I'm thinking about a guy that I know who went with his daughter when she was a middle schooler, went with her, Roman Catholic guy, went with his middle school daughter to South America and repaired roofs for a week on a mission trip. He comes back home, he retires early, and he starts Homeworks. So Hank has repaired over 2,000 roofs in Colombia for people that can't afford, you know, that every time it rains like it's doing out here, you know, while we're talking, the water's coming in and say, they can't afford to fix. Hank's done it, and he's used over 20,000 school-age kids to do it. He takes them in teams. He replicated that experience that he had, that intergenerational. I was with him one time when there was a group of middle schoolers, and they bedded down in a church there, and Hank, you know, does their night prayers, and then they get up, and he does the morning devotion, sends these kids out with adult supervision, to work on roofs all week. And then at the end of the week, it's beautiful. On Friday night, these same kids prepare a banquet and serve it to and the guests of the banquet are the people whose roofs they fixed. And they just thank them for letting them serve. Oh, it's just, it's a beautiful story. Mm-hmm. And like I say, now Hank figured out his scorecard was not, I can't fix everything, but I can fix roofs. Now, by the way, he retired from IRS. And being a Roman Catholic, I told him, I said, Hank, you've done such good work. You've earned at least a half second out of purgatory. You know, I mean, for all that work you did as an IRS agent, you know, I mean, he's got a long time he's going to have to really spend there, I'm pretty sure. But I mean, just being able to figure out what contribution I wanted to make and how to keep score with that. And the scorecard includes how many kids I'm, not just the roofs I fixed, but how many kids, those kids will never forget being up on those roofs,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing that kind of stuff. And Hank, given the evening prayers and the morning prayers, I mean, it's just beautiful. And then the last question would be, well, what else is there I need to learn? You know, I mean, because we all need, I mean, what is it I want to do to help other people and what behaviors are going to support it? What do I bring to the table? What's my scorecard? Well, then what is there I need to add to my competency or yeah. what, you know? I think if we can help people roll through some of those questions and help them answer them for themselves, I think we're along the way to really developing some viral kingdom agents.
Yeah.
So, you know, however that gets done, whether it's over time or personally or individually, I recommend it as, you know, it's just some ways.
And don't, there's individuals, but I think those are good conversations for church too. I
mean,
I think churches have gifts and personalities and passions that we get corporately.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, one of the words we've been sort of talking about without saying, I think the biblical word is discernment, right? The Spirit's at work. The Spirit is leading. How do I hear that? How do I parse that out? How do I look at that in my own life? How do I look at that in my community? And so it's individual, but it's also corporate.
And you know, if we can help people and then tell their stories, and I know you're big on this.
Yeah.
So I was with this Episcopal congregation, not a big, you know, 120, 40 people on a Sunday morning, you know. I did a weekend, talked about getting engaged with the community. A few people got it. One really got it. She was a woman who stood up at the end and said, I teach middle schoolers math. I need some help. We got kids that need that. I just need people that, you know, if you, you know, below eighth grade math, you know, well, that knocks some people out. But I went back a year later and I said, how's that program going? And they said, oh, we've got 8 or 10 people. Well, that may not sound like much, but that's the entire set of early adopters, as you well know, in the curve of innovation. You know, they'd all pitched in. They were on their way. So, and the pastor, the rector said, you know, ask Frank, I'll just, you know, there about it, because he's doing it. So I turned to Frank. I'm meeting with the vestry. We're around a table. I said, Frank, what, you know, tell me. He says, so Susan then says, oh, he won't tell you, but he took a kid that was failing eighth grade, and now the kid's knocking the, not only past eighth grade, he's knocking the ball out of the park and you know, ninth grade. And I said, what are you doing with this kid? And he said, oh, not much. And I said, come on, give. You know, he said, well, we get together on Monday for breakfast, and I make sure he's got what he needs and for school that week. You can read between the lines there. And I said, Frank, what you're doing is changing the trajectory of this kid's life.
Mm-hmm.
And by now, big old tears, you know. And he said, oh, no, what this kid's doing for me is doing is way more than I'm doing for him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, Frank, by the way, is 73 years old. And, I mean, he's having the time of his life with this, you know. And you get Frank up to tell that story in church, and you've just now infected a whole bunch more people with the virus. You know, that's how the kingdom works.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just God's great way of building people as we serve. And but if Frank hadn't made those little adjustments along mm-hmm. to be able to figure that out, he'd be missing that. But anyway, to me, that's kingdom.
Yeah,
cutting people free to live.
Yeah, and there's an inertia that reverses it, right? Inertia says churches that are not in motion tend to remain not in motion. But if they get going, there's a synergy that happens when we start telling those stories.
Yes.
We start doing that as a community. More people start finding their own, you know, but it's all these little moves that get going and build energy.
Yes. And what difference does it make that kid never comes to that church on a Sunday morning? I mean, he's not going to. Yeah. First of all, he can't get there. I mean, there's a whole bunch of reasons. But look at the impact. If you help eighth graders survive eighth grade and stay in school, they got a shot at life. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we know where that's headed. Well, that's big. Every life matters. This is why I feel.
Yeah. Well, and the double message is that kid's life matters, but that guy's life matters too.
Yes.
And so that's why you got to find your passion, your gifts, your place in the kingdom, and make the margin to move that way.
And yeah, exactly. And then, and when church becomes storytelling like that, and we know we're going to run into those stories, I don't think you have to entice people back with, you know, pack the pew programs or whatever. I mean, what if our gatherings, what if our websites, what if our, you know, e-blasts, whatever, were just chock full of people coming alive? Isn't that's the resurrection power.
Yeah. Well, that's something I want to go to. That's something I want to give to.
Exactly.
That's something I want to tell my neighbor about.
Yeah. And that's the story America needs all across this country. We need those stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Stories of hope, stories of life.
Yep. And that's answering the prayer that the kingdom would come on earth. We become co-conspirators with God.
Yeah. I like that, co-conspirators.
Well, I just have some suggestions for how we develop some viral kingdom agents. I just thought those are questions that I found that help.
That's great.